keep in mind two things to do when he's given the shear. One is for Rachel Bas Miriam.
Rachel Bas Miriam.
And Rabbi Kirzner is not doing very well right now. So when Bobby gets in, he knows the names. So,
Okay. Refuah Shleima for everyone. Today I wanted to split our time in the following way. One third, I want to discuss different questions that have come up over the last couple of days. I may have touched on them in the past, I don't know, but I'm looking at it with a fresh start. And then the bulk of the Shia, Mitz Hashem, will talk about what we call the Choshev Mishpat issues of Corona. On the first part of the Shia, I looked up a Meshech Chachma at the end of Parshas Truma that has become the subject of great controversy here in the land of Israel since Corona. The authorities here have encountered a very, very difficult, a very challenging situation in terms of the numbers of infected people, hospitalized, etc. And therefore, they have instituted some very harsh and far-reaching decisions, restrictions, that have had a tremendous impact on the yeshiva world here in Israel. And when I say an impact, I don't mean a positive one. And as a result of some of these enactments, I don't want to use the word gzeros, but decrees of some sort, many yeshivas, especially for the younger children and the high school age children, have virtually closed down. They've allowed schooling for the younger children that are very, very young, but only up to grades 1 or 2. Maybe lately they've loosened it a little bit, but you're talking about many, many thousands of young men and women who are being denied a yeshiva education. The fallback position are phone calls. Generally speaking, what we're using now, which is Zoom, is not acceptable in many of the very orthodox circles. So, you know, you're really in a very fallback position. As a result, young men have not been studying Torah on the level. And I would say almost everybody agrees to the following assessment. It's a qualitative difference in the learning of Torah. Qualitative. It's not just a matter of how much learning, how many hours they put in. And this has led to a very profound controversy, or almost a methodological debate, about how to understand our Torah. And this debate is going on not between, you know, different wings of orthodoxy. It's really within the essence of, and touches upon the essence of every Orthodox Jew in terms of the question of, in a sense, if I could put it this way, relying upon science, medicine, and coming to the conclusion, assessing the scientific facts on the ground, the medical facts, there is an element of danger involved. And that's one school of thought that puts all the emphasis here in all their Piskei Halacha on the issue of health, the statistical possibility of exposing danger. I think if I had to pinpoint the proponents of that school of thought here in Eretz Yisrael, it would probably be Rav Usher Zelig Weiss and Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, those two poskim in America, Rav Herschel Schechter, and then another school of thought that says we're dealing with the entire Jewish community. We are dealing with issues that touch on the future of Torah and its transmission. And here's where the halacha has to bend in a totally different direction, despite the element of danger. And a source that has become very controversial in this context is the last Meshech Chochma in Parshas Truma. The Meshech Chochma presents and analyzes a Gemara in Masechta Yoma. And it's a very famous Gemara, you've all heard of it. It's about the name for a certain gate, a certain entrance into the Beis HaMikdash, which is called Shar Nikanor. And the Gemara asks why this Shar was called Shar Nikanor. And the Gemara says that Nasu lo nisim lidal sosav. What happens is that Nikanor volunteers, or shall I say, commits himself to contribute two beautiful doors to the Beis HaMikdash, and he is carrying them by ship from Alexandria of Mitzrayim all the way to Yerushalayim. And on the way, the ship is capsized and there is a danger. And what they do is they grab one of these very heavy doors and they throw it overboard to lighten the burden. They're about to throw the second one over, and Nicanor says, I'm not going to allow it. He wraps himself around the door and he tells them, if you're going to throw this door overboard, you're going to throw me overboard with it. And that's exactly what happened. Immediately after they threw him overboard, the storm subsided. And the Gemara goes ahead and tells us what a tremendous miracle it happened. He was able to actually travel all the way to the shore, holding on to his door. The other door, magically, supernaturally, also made it all the way to the shore. And the Gemara wants to suggest that all the doors in the Beis HaMikdash were made of gold, except for one door, one opening entrance that are made of two doors. And those were made of a different material, whether it's Koros, Batenu, Arazim, Brosim, the Gemara quotes a pasuk, perhaps it was made of Nechoshes. Be it as it may, because of the miracles that happened, that occurred with these doors, they call them Shar Nikanor. However, the Gemara quotes another opinion, that of Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that the reason why they called these gates by a different name is because they were made of a beautiful kind of nechoshes and they were gold-plated. And Rabbi Simcha, at the end of Parshas Truma, wants to understand why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov refused the first interpretation, that this name came from the fact of the great miracle that happened through Nicanor when he held on to the gates and was thrown into the sea. In a very original interpretation, quoting a Gemara in Masechta Bava Kamma, in Perek HaKones, where the Gemara seems to assume that David HaMelech could not repeat a certain halacha in the name of the person who had actually formulated that halacha, because that person had exposed himself to danger. And the Gemara's language is kol moser atzmo lamus, if a person exposes himself to such a danger, afilu al divrei Torah, even if he does it for the sake of Torah, Ein omrim dvar halacha b'shmo. We will not repeat his Torah in his name. In other words, we, in a sense, we have to I don't know, maybe this is a little bit too extreme, but just for the sake of conversation, I'll call it to blot out his memory in the context of this Torah, because if we remember him, then we're remembering a person who is Moser Atzmo Lomus al Divrei Torah. And Rabbi Simcha uses that Gemara in Bava Kamma with regard to David HaMelech to explain why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov refused to accept that the doors of Nicanor were called by that name because of the great act of Nicanor and the miracle that took place as a result of that act, because he was Moser Atzmo and it was Shalom Kedin, it was against the Halacha. We can't possibly use that name. At this point, Rabbi Meir Simcha raises a contradiction from a Gemara at the beginning of Megillah. The Gemara in the beginning of Megillah describes the episode of the Malach who came to Yoshua. He appeared in front of Yoshua at the time of the great warfare, the battles of Yoshua to conquer the land of Israel. And when Yoshua sees the vision of this Malach, the Malach is holding on to a cherev, a sword. He asks him, Halonu atoim l'tzareinu, and then the Malach identifies himself as the great angel sent as a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for destructive purposes. What was the terrible avera of Yoshua? And the Malach describes two averas. Number one, as a result of their dedication to the battle, Yoshua forgot, or maybe deliberately, did not bring the Karban Tamid. And number two, there was Bittul Torah. The people were not studying Torah properly. So Yoshua asks the Malach, why did you come? Did you come because of the first Avera? This morning we didn't bring the Tamid. Or did you come for this Avera now, that now we are resting in the camp for the night, and we are not involved in the study of Torah? And the Malach responds, Ata Basi. That's the Pasuk. Ata with an ayin means, I came for this last sin, that the soldiers of Israel are not involved in the study of Torah. This despite the fact that there's a great danger surrounding us on all sides. And yet, Yoshua, despite that danger, is punished in the language of Meir Simcha, Nenash Yoshua Mipnei Shelo Osak B'Torah B'Eis HaMelchama, because during the battle, they were not dedicating themselves to Torah. So Meir Simcha has to, in some sense, find a reconciliation between these various sources in Chazal. And if we go to Gemara Baba Kama, you're not supposed to be Moser Atzma al Divrei Torah. Why would Yoshua therefore be held responsible and guilty and punished because he did not study Torah, which would have involved exposing the people to some element of danger? So Rabbi Simcha says the following. Al Talmud Torah de Rabim, I'm quoting Rabbi Simcha, Tzorech limsar atzmo lemisa ulesaken avur ze. When it comes to Talmud Torah of the Rabbim, at the time of Yoshua, the masses of Jewish soldiers in the military campaign, that requires mesiras nefesh for Torah, even if it means exposing yourself to danger. And Rabbi Simcha completes his parish on Sefer Shmos with the words, Lachain Moshe. Why is the Torah called Torah's Moshe? Shemosar nafsho al Torah shall call Yisrael. He was the one who was willing to give up his life for the sake of the Torah of Klal Yisrael. Ulefichach nikreis haTorah al Shmo shenemar, pasuk at the end of Tanakh, Zichru Torah's Moshe Avdi. The entire presentation of Rabbi Simcha seems to be a halachic presentation. Those who argue that this is Agadita, I would say the ball is in their court. They have to prove that Rabbi Meir Simcha only meant this as a philosophical comment. Rabbi Meir Simcha is trying to reconcile various statements in Chazal. Is it laudable and recommended that a person put up put his life, expose himself to danger for the sake of Torah? After all, it's not one of the big three. And Rabbi Simcha, according to this approach, is pontificating. He's just talking about philosophical, abstract, conceptual ideas of what we would call drush and agadita. Nothing should be derived from Rabbi Simcha. In my mind, again, I'm not here to prejudice you, but I think that the ball is in their court. Rabbi Simcha is certainly asking basic questions about what the Torah allows, what it doesn't allow, and what it prescribes and requires. And he's telling us that there's a difference between Talmud Torah the Yochid and Talmud Torah the Rabbin. And in fact, the Yalkut Shimoni, in its version of the same episode, the encounter between Yoshua and the Malach, adds a couple of words. And that is, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Abba, Mishmei Durav, Gadol Talmud Torah, Yosem Akrovas Tmidim, Shenemar Atabasi, V'Talmud Torah Durabim V'lo Diyochid. So this distinction is clear, both in the Bavli and in the Yalkut, between Talmud Torah Diyochid. I don't expose myself to danger, but if the Torah of the Rabbim is at stake, then I'm obligated to put my life into danger, expose myself to sakana. And it's not just words of agadita, these are words of halacha. These are conclusions based on reward and punishment. And when the Gemara tells about Rabbi Akiva at the time of the Gzeirah of the Romans, that he exposed himself to danger for the sake of Talmud Torah, and he compares him, the Jewish people, to fish, and fish in water are alive, you take the fish out of the water, they perish, and ein mayim ela Torah, that may be an agadic statement, but it further supports the conclusion that Talmud Torah Derabim is in a category of its own. Now, if the poskim want to claim that we're not facing a situation of Talmud Torah Derabim, let the students in the yeshiva study on their own in isolation, and despite the lockdown, they will continue in Talmud Torah, then that's an acceptable position. And that would be an evaluation of the situation on the ground, as we call it, the metzius basheta. But if you are going to face this situation that's facing the entire yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael and the whole Torah community, now you're making a decision on a whole different level. I'm not talking to Reuven, to Shimon, and to Levi. Should they be exposing themselves for the sake of Talmud Torah to a sakana? The answer to that question is undeniably no. But if you're asking a question about policy that has an impact on all of Klal Yisrael, one could begin to appreciate that school of thought that has become such an issue of controversy here in the land of Israel that maintains that Talmud Torah Derabim, says Rabbi Simcha, is an entire different halacha. And we are facing a situation now that could be defined and should be evaluated as Talmud Torah Derabim.
How does the Rav differentiate, you know, separate policy from individuals in this situation?
It's very difficult to know where you draw the boundaries, but now that we're talking about a situation, a decree that has impacted on hundreds, thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of yeshiva students. You know, by the way, this is a comment off the side. Which yeshiva students are doing the best here in Israel? It's the chutznikim. Very fascinating. Those who are coming from countries like Canada and other countries. In one yeshiva where my son-in-law is a Rebbe, there are no restrictions whatsoever. They're back to yeshiva, 300 students learning Yom HaValayah like nothing's going on. Why? Half of them had corona already in America. The other half had corona since they got to Israel. There's virtually no student. There are a couple of boys wearing masks because they are the few far between who didn't have corona. In any event, we're talking and facing a situation where I can tell you here, right here in Har Nof, I daven in an outdoor minyan over here across the street. It's called Imre Shefer. And there are tons of yeshiva guys. And I'm asking myself, what are they doing here? Why aren't they in yeshiva? You know, and they're, you know, for every guy who's out there coming to minyan, I don't know, again, I don't want to say it because if I say it out loud, it'll be pishlan peh. I don't know how many, etc. So this I want you to be aware of. In terms of what we call Piske Corona, has become an issue that divides the world of Torah, not because of an issue in a specific psak halacha, but because an issue in methodology. How do we approach halacha? And as I said at the outset, there are many poskim, I call them, if you don't mind, the classic poskim, who are totally dedicated to one mitzvah and one mitzvah only, Ushmartem es nafsho secha. And that's the dry cut halacha, and don't talk to me about anything. And if a person tries to violate the halacha, we're going to humiliate him publicly because he is lax for the sake of Torah in these rules and regulations. And another school of thought is saying, wait a minute, Barbosai, hold everything. We're talking now not about Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. We're talking about Talmud Torah de Rabin. We are talking about months upon months of truncated learning of Torah that has had a tremendously detrimental impact that rips through and ripples through the entire yeshiva world. And it's lo pashut. Now, it could be that because of the training that I came from, you know, I have to present to you the view of a Weiss and Rav Zilberstein, and Rav Herschel Schechter. I mean, that's the way I was brought up. I mean, my father, Zichron Levracha, in his worldview, there was nothing more important than Ushmatim and Otis Nafshosei. But on the other hand, I would make a passionate plea that we rethink this whole thing, and that lo pashut. It's, you know, elu velu, there are different opinions here, and it's really touching on a very sensitive issue with tremendous ramifications. Okay, I'd like to go on to another topic that came up recently. Again, for Canadians, this may sound totally, you know, like on foreign ears, but it's a very fascinating issue that came up here in Israel in the last couple of weeks. Because of the lockdown, and the Israeli government started loosening up some of the rules. For example, now already, we're at the point where a store is allowed to open. This could change tomorrow, by the way. And they're allowed to have four buyers inside the store. Maximum four. That's called Arba Lekuchot. And if you walk down, for example, right here, there's a major, you know, shopping street, which is called Kanfei Nisharim. You will see almost in every store a sign that says, have patience, you know, savlanut, because we're only allowed four lekuchot at one time. So I was waiting online, and all I wanted to do was to take a picture of a chandelier that I thought maybe my wife would be interested in buying because we did a renovation recently on our apartment. And I was begging the guy, open the door, I won't go inside, just so I could take a picture from the outside. Well, either he didn't hear me, or he cared not to hear me, if you know what I mean. So after about 20 minutes, no one was coming out, and if no one's coming out, no one's going in, I dropped it. That was it. I didn't have the patience for that. So now a new halachic shaila has arisen. And I don't know if I'm allowed to publicize this because it involves a violation of the law here in Israel, but it seems that a lot of store owners, during the period of time before this loosening, so I'm going back just about a week, even less, when you weren't allowed any buyers into the store. Now imagine, the only way you could convince a buyer to buy something would be either if they saw it online and they came to order it by you, or perhaps they could see it through the window, or you could take a picture of it and send it to them. But a lot of buyers want to see it in the flesh. So what's going on now is some of the proprietors, some of the store owners are violating the law here, and they are letting people in. And what they do is they lock the door behind them, and go to the back of the store so that the police can't find them. And now the poskim are wondering if there's an Iser Yichud. Imagine a woman that gets locked inside a store, and this is happening all the time now, with the proprietor. The door is locked in such a way that the police should not be able to see what's going on inside, and they can't come in. And there's a serious yichud problem. Now, if it's two women, it's a little bit less severe, but the Mishnah says at the end of Kiddushin that two women with one man is also a violation of the Isur Yichud. And therefore, you've got a problem. Some of the poskim say this is absolutely asur, and they quote the halacha of what's called prutzim. Prutzim means that although two men are allowed to be alone in a closed room with a woman, with one woman, possibly even with two women, but only if they're ksherim, not if they're prutzim. If they're prutzim, you can have 10 prutzim together with one woman, and there's an isur yichud. Now, exactly how to define prutzim is itself an issue, but I'm going to leave that out for now. So let me express to you, if you don't mind, my personal opinion on this issue, because I did a lot of research. I actually published an article many, many years ago in the RJJ Journal, which is called Halach and Contemporary Society, on Yichud, on the issue of Yichud. And the issue of women in the marketplace, in the working place, came up 5 centuries ago in Egypt. And that might sound like a shock to you, that Jewish Orthodox women were working in non-Jewish geschäfts, you know, during the period of time in which they would support their family. That sounds like very contemporary. You know, you have kollel wives that are out there working to support their husbands so the husbands could continue learning. But this phenomenon of women, of Orthodox women, married Orthodox women working amongst the goyim is not something new. It's not contemporary. And the breakthrough tshuva on this issue, when yichud came up as a problem because the women were working in places where there were only goyim involved, and that means prutzim, so the numbers are not relevant really. And then sometimes the women would stay a little bit longer, they would get paid overtime, and the Radbaz was faced with this problem. And although he spends the first long paragraph of the tshuva yelling, Chai V'Kayim, screaming, Shrai V'Kayim, but how could the women do such a thing? It's not proper, it's not tzniyus. But then he writes an entire tshuva in which he tries to come up with a heter. Very odd. I guess he realized that, you know, he was up against the brick wall over here. He could talk about tzniyus from now till doomsday, but the question is there a violation of Isur Yichud? And he came up with 2 fascinating Gemaras, and he applied them to Yichud as no one had ever done before. One is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that deals with what's called animal breeders. Normally you're not allowed to watch animals mate. It might lead to Hirhur. But the Gemara allows it for professional animal breeders. And the Gemara formulates the principle, Agav Melachtayu Tride, that they are so preoccupied with their malacha to breed the animals that they don't have enough room in the brain, in the mind, for having these hirhurim. And the Gemara allows it. And then there's another Gemara, also at the end of Kiddushin, that speaks about a concept called mirsas. Mirsas means that when you're afraid and you're inhibited, and if you get caught, you will be punished. And then the Gemara in Avodah Zarah uses that same svar of Mirsas in the case of an Isha Chashuva who's alone with a non-Jewish man. And an Isha Chashuva, many Rishonim say, is a woman, a Jewish woman who is politically connected such that she would have recourse if this non-Jew would make advances at her. She could actually sue him in a court of law, a secular non-Jewish court of law. The Gemara says that's called Mirsas. And Mirsas means that the person is inhibited because his entire reputation is at stake. And the Radbaz applies both these svaras to the case of Jewish women working in the non-Jewish marketplace? Because he says, number one, they are involved in malacha, meaning the proprietors are trying to make a business, and they don't have time to get into a different mode of thinking. And at the same time, the second svar of Mirsas, that if they get caught, this, by the way, Mirsas was the basis for Moshe Feinstein's heter for Chalav Akum. You familiar with that? That if the company will mix pig's milk and they get caught, they'll lose their license, they'll be punished and penalized. Again, at the end of the tshuva, he writes, Bal Nefesh Yachmer Al Atzmo, but Mikar Din, Rav Moshe was Matir. We used to call it, where I was from, Elmhurst Milk. I don't remember the names of the various companies that produce milk. And the Radbaz wanted to apply this to Yichud. The Radbaz goes ahead and he makes all sorts of stipulations, but he basically churns this all out. So I'm just wondering, in the case, what would the Radbaz say in our case, during this corona period, can a woman go into a store to see the merchandise and make a decision, and the proprietor will lock the door behind? Perhaps you could apply the principle of Radbaz, number one, b'malachto tarud, and number two, if he gets caught, and she certainly has recourse to sue him in a court of law, he would lose his reputation, lose his parnasa, and therefore maybe we could be making. Again, all this is only a fallback position. Certainly it's not something that we should advocate in favor of. I had mentioned in the past, if you recall, two smaller issues. I'll just reiterate them. I had another chance to think about them again. I'll be right back to you, Joe, in a second. And that is, if a person's wearing a mask and he wants to eat an apple, does he have to take off the mask before he makes the bracha? Or can he make the bracha and then take off the mask? Now, I saw that they're advertising very sophisticated masks that allow you to eat while you're wearing the mask. I don't know, I'm just joking with you. But seriously, the Gemara in Brachos talks about the following case. A person made hamotzi and then he needs salt for his bread. I'll call karbanecha tochal melech. So he asks for the salt. The Gemara says it's not a hefsek. Why? Because it's considered litzorach achila. So the poskim want to suggest that taking the mask off is litzorach achila, but the Gemara does say that l'chatchila, if all things are equal, you should have the salt on the table before you make the bracha, before you recite the amotzi, to minimize the hefsek that wedges between the bracha and the achila. So therefore, as far as the mask is concerned, if all things are ideal, he should take off the mask before he recites the bracha. If he did not do so, then it's no different than pass the salt, and he's allowed to take off the mask after the bracha. And finally, and then I'll take questions, another shaila that came up recently in outdoor minyanim, and that is because it's become very hot, and because of the warmth, they have organized fans to cool off the air, so to speak, in these outdoor minyanim. And now we have a Shabbos issue. Why? Because the fans are actually, more often than not, are placed on top of branches of trees. They tie it down to trees. I'm not talking about the sukkah issue. You know, if you have trees, you have a schach under mechuba lekaka, under a tree. But we're talking about a regular Shabbos. It's not sukkahs. And the issue is, are you allowed to tie before Shabbos, obviously, to tie down a fan onto the tree, and the fan will cool you off on Shabbos during the minyan, during the davening. And the Gemara tells us, at the end of Masechta Beitzah, that they had a special gzeirah not to benefit from trees on Shabbos or Yontif, because they're afraid of gzeirah shemiyala v'yitlosh. He may come to climb up the tree. And the Gemara in Erevin speaks about a case where a person put out his Erev Tchumin on the branch of a tree, and the Gemara vacillates back and forth as to whether or not you're allowed to do such a thing, because on Shabbos, if he has access to the Shtei, Muslim Shtei Sudos, he's going to benefit from the tree, because the tree, the branch of the tree, is holding on to his Erev. And you're not allowed to have Hanor from a tree on Shabbos. So the poskim want to suggest that these fans are problematic because they are holding up the tree the branch of the tree is holding up the fan, and that facilitates your benefit from the fan. So you're benefiting from the tree itself that's holding on to the fan. All right, Joe, you had a question before, and that completes my first part of today's discussion.
Two things. First of all, with regards to this last thing with the fan, because, you know, I mean, are you saying you're not allowed to stand in the shade of a tree on Shabbos?
Oh, so the shade of the tree is something different. Why? Because you're not benefiting from a section of the tree that was designated specifically for the purpose of Hanah. When you use the tree and set it up in such a way that you will have Hanah from the tree, so you do an act of organizing the tree in such a way to hold on to your Muslim Shtei Sudos, that's considered Nene from an Ilan from a tree. And therefore, if you place the fans on top of the tree. Now, if the tree is giving you shade and you walk by the shade, that's something totally different. Then we're not afraid that you're going to climb up the tree. But as soon as you...
I know, but I'm just wondering again. I'm just, you know, like, the shade is not the tree itself. It's a thing from the tree. The fan is not the tree. It's sun from the tree. So,
right. Now, let's say you would lean on the tree. That would be problematic. Because then you're doing an act to benefit from the tree. But if you happen to be walking by a tree or even sitting under a tree, you have not done an act of taking the Hanah. Whenever there's an Isra Hanah, we want to know if you're actually benefiting in a direct way by taking the Hanah from the object that's Osir Hanah.
Okay.
And this, by the way, if you have a chance... I don't know, are you doing Daf Yomi?
Yeah.
So you're going to get to Pesachim very shortly. This issue that we're talking about walking by a tree and benefiting from its shade, is actually an explicit sugi in Pesachim on page 25, Chafei. And that's the famous sugya of Isuri Anah B'nene V'lo Efshar. In other words, he's got two pathways, and he could go down one pathway where there's an avodah zarah and he'll benefit from the smell. He can go down another pathway. And the Gemara goes through various scenarios, variations. Did he deliberately choose that derech because he wanted to benefit from the avodah zarah, from the incense that they were burning? Or it was just a flip case where he had two, you know, he had two choices and he wasn't... And the yesod of that sugya in Lomdus is whether or not you're taking Hanah. In Isuri Hanah, you have to take the Isuri Hanah.
Right. Okay, and so the other thing was, so the Red Buzz would say, in our situation of the store, because the person, I mean, it's not like work. There's two things. It's not like work insofar as the person...
Joe, tell Harvey you're coming a little later, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's not like work. It's not like work.
If you don't behave, Joe, I'll put you on mute. I'm warning you.
It's not like work as they're involved. He's saying in this situation, even though it's like a store, it's not the same as work.
I'm suggesting. Based on the Red Baz, that maybe you could make that equation, and there are distinctions.
Okay.
Now, what I asked... Yeah, go ahead. Bobby. I think Bobby is talking now, but I don't hear him. This means I don't hear you. And this means unmute yourself.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, now I hear you.
I have a problem. When I go on mute, I can't come back from mute. I have to switch my speaker. Anyway, the case of the fan, I can hear an issue where you're worried that you're going to climb up the tree to fix the fan, with dipping the light, you can't use a nair because you might dip the oil. But in terms of, you know, having it up there and blowing on you and having Hanah, that's not... You're not having Hanah from the tree. You're having Hanah from the fan. The tree is just a support mechanism, and it's
right.
It, it,
But Bobby, that's the case of Erev Tchumen. In other words, the Erev itself is the Erev, and that's the Mazon Shtei Sudos.
No, but the idea
is the branch of the tree is holding on to your Mazon Shtei Sudos.
No, the problem there is that you're gonna have to climb up to the tree to get your Mazon. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so also if let's say I need to readjust the fan, I'll climb up.
You say that's the issue, is that you're worried that you need to climb up to the to
correct.
The thing.
In other words, if
that's the issue,
the real issue is that if I couldn't benefit from this fan without the branch of the tree holding up the fan, I am benefiting from the tree itself. And Chazal made a gzera, and it's a low plug kind of situation, that whenever you're benefiting from a tree on Shabbos, you violate this gzera. All right. Now, what I asked you to take a look at is a very long essay in a journal called Alon HaMishpat. And I want to thank David for sending this out. It's a very long piece. David says it's only 8 pages long, and he has it as a shorter piece. I don't know, in my version I have 10 pages, but whatever it is, it's a pretty long piece. And I started working through it. It's going to probably take me a month to go through it. But I made some progress. And I was beginning to understand a few things that I never knew before. Now, just in case you happen to have the text in front of you, so you would turn to page 2, which offhand is very strange because the introduction to the whole piece is page 1. But I found that pedagogically, if you fast forward to page 2, you'll understand the introduction much better. That's what I believe. Now, what's on page 2? On page 2, we're talking about Schirus Karkos, which means that I entered into a contractual agreement with you. I'm the socher. I want to rent your place as a vacation place or to set up a wedding or whatever it might be. And you're the maskir. You're the person who rents it out to me. You're the balabais. And now we have a pandemic and I can't enjoy the benefit of this rental. I get absolutely nothing out of it. Do I have to pay you simply because we made a kinyan, we entered into a contractual agreement? Or do I say no? Situations are beyond my control. I cannot benefit from the rental. Why should I pay you for the rental? Now, here's the question that I want to throw out. And I'm throwing it out for pedagogical purposes. Is there any difference between the following two scenarios? A is quarantine, which means bidud. I, by law, by virtue of the law, am in quarantine, and therefore I can't benefit from the rental. I can't even get access to the rental. I'm locked up in my house. And scenario B is a general lockdown where no one's going anywhere. And, you know, when I thought about it, I said, you'd be splitting hairs if you differentiated between the two, because in both cases, the socher cannot benefit from the schirus. Neither in the first case where he's quarantined, nor in the second case where there's a lockdown. Why should the halacha make a distinction? And guess what? The halacha does make a distinction. And I was in shock. And to me, this is an example of how distant we are when we think in terms of human logic and when we approach something from a halachic approach based on the laws and the regulations of halach. So I want to show you is here on page 2. And we're looking at paragraph number 4. on page 2. And in paragraph number 4, he presents a concept called Makas HaMedina. Again, if I had a big whiteboard here, I'd write this in big letters, because almost all the questions of Choshen Mishpat revolve around this fundamental concept. He tells you in the note that it's a Gemara in Bab Metzia, Daf Kuf Hei Amid Beis, 105b. And the case is where a person rents a field, and his purpose is obviously to raise crops. And all of a sudden, Ochla Chagav, there is an attack of grasshoppers from the sky. O Nishtifa, another kind of pestilence, or there's an inundation of a flood of water. So the Gemara says that Makas Medina, Menakalo Min Chachuro. Chachuro is another way of saying rental fees. Menake means that we diminish, we subtract from the rental fees. So that's what we have in paragraph 4 on page 2. And we're going to have an issue about Makas HaMedina. Now, working our way backwards for a moment to paragraph number 2 on that same page, he's got a section which is entitled in big, bold, black print, Ones Shekara Rakli Echad Min Atzdod. What happens is that the reason why the socher cannot benefit from the schirus, the renter from the rental agreement, is because of an ones, a situation beyond his control, that has made it virtually impossible for him to enjoy this rental agreement. And he gives the example of Sochar Makom B'Kinyan HaMo'il. So there was a rental agreement on a certain place with a Kinyan. Kigon, he gives an example of Sochar Tzimmer L'Nofesh. Right, so he has this vacation house that he rented. And there's no lockdown. You can move from place to place. You want to go on vacation and enjoy the tzimmer that you rented? Fine, go ahead. Aval hu ne'elatz l'ikanes l'bidud. But he is required now to go into quarantine. Again, I don't know if you have this in your part of the world, but here, if you're exposed to someone who is infected and has tested positive, then you have to go into quarantine. Officially, it's 2 weeks. There are different innuendos, and now it's really going down to 12 days and maybe even down to 10 days. Whatever it is, it's bidud. Now, as a result of the bidud, ein lo efsharut l'shtamesh b'makom sh'sochar. So he rented a place from January 1st to January 10th, and he's in bidud for that 10 days. And one school of Rishonim says, yesh alav chiyuv l'shalem es kol dmei aschirus. He has to pay the entire rental fee, as stipulated in the contract. What greater onus could there be? He is required, because of this epidemic and his exposure to it, to go into quarantine. He has no way of enjoying the benefit of that rental. And yet, according to one school of thought, he is halachically obligated to pay the full price of the rental. Now, even though there's another opinion, just one second, Joe, and the other opinion says that he's patur because of ones, nevertheless, im shilei mirosh, if he put the money down on the table up front, Ein hamaskir tzorich lahachzilo klum me'akesef. The maskir doesn't have to return a dime. And the reason for that is, as we discussed at great length last Wednesday, because of the halacha of muchzak. The maskir is holding on to the money. The socher wants to get his money in return. Give me my money back. Hamotzi mechavela of l'raya. Go prove to me that we paskin that you don't have to pay me the rental fee. We have a school of thought, a major school of thought in the Rishonim, that paskin that you do have to pay the rental in this case. Now we go to Makas Medina. In the case of Makas Medina, the Gemara says, Menakin lo min chachara, which means that the maskir and the socher will split the difference. So let's say, for example, the rental was 100. The maskir will have to swallow a loss of 50, and the socher will have to pay 50. And in the case of bidud, we just finished saying that, according to one school of thought, he has to pay every last dime. There's no din of menakalo mischaro. To such an extent that if the maskir is holding on to the money because there was an upfront payment, the maskir doesn't return a dime. Well, what's going on over here? On the one hand, you're telling me menakalo mischaro because of the makas medina. And there's circumstances here beyond that control. You know, the chagavim came down from the heavens and they started eating up the grains. And menakalo mischaro, sort of like yachloku almost. They're 50-50. You know, you'll take half the loss, I'll take half. The maskir and the socher split the loss. But here we're saying that the socher went into bidud because of this terrible pandemic and he cannot enjoy the benefit of the rental at all. This opinion has it that he has to pay the money up front. And this has halachic repercussions in a case where the money is in the bank account of the maskir. Again, we spoke last week about a check, whether a check makes him into muchzak or the socher could cancel the check. But if he paid him in hard cash and the money's in the bank and the maskir is holding on to it, the socher is completely out in the cold. And this halacha l'maisa. What's the difference between the two? And the answer is, and that's what this entire introduction is on page one, that there's a concept in halacha called, again, I would need a whiteboard to write it down, but if you could write it down in your page, mazolcha garam. We're familiar with this from Ksubis, in a case where they set the marriage 12 months after the Erusin, and she got sick, he got sick, and the Gemara goes back and forth, who's mazel? In other words, which party was guilty, so to speak? Again, it's a funny kind of guilt because there's no negligence here and no punishment, but it's some sort of divine punishment. Which party is prevented from enjoying the benefit of this rental agreement? Makas Medina means that no one could take the blame for it. That it's mazel shneim garam. And he quotes a ritva here. Okay, there's just so much here, I can't find it right this second. I'll find it as we go along. And the ritva says that Makas Medina is a separate takana which Chazal instituted in a case where both parties are suffering from a bad mazel, so to speak. And the situation of this pandemic makes it impossible to enjoy the rental. But herein lies the distinction. If there's a general lockdown, no one in this particular state can enjoy the benefit of that tzimmer and that rental agreement. That's called a makas medina. And then we're going to apply the principle of menakalo mischaro. And each party will suffer and chip into the loss 50%. But in the case of bidud, the maskir says to the socher, here's my tzimmer, no problem. There are no legal issues here that are Bichlal HaMedina, that no one's allowed to get access to this tzimmer. Here it is. Come and take it. Ah, you're in Bidud. My friend, that's called Mazlecha Goram. That's your problem. You're the party in this agreement that could not effectuate and realize the benefits from the schirus. The contract is binding. There's no takana of Makas Medina. The opinion that says he's parted from the schirus, that's called onus. He was not guilty in any shape or form. He cannot enjoy the benefit of the schirus, and he's potter. And this brings up a famous machlokes about a case of a socher who died. And the question is, the masker wants to come to the yorshim, to the heirs, and collect the schirus. And this gigantic debate about whether the masker has a right to claim that you have to pay me. Why? Because maslecha gora. Here's my apartment. I rented it out to you. Okay, never he died, so he can't obviously enjoy the benefit of the rental. That's not my problem, says the masker. That's your problem. It's certainly not Makas Medina, but it's ones. There's circumstances beyond your control. The Malchimovis, once he gets you, he gets you. That's it. Finito. So that in this issue of Bidud, we're talking about a whole different set of rules and regulations, and that's called ones. Does ones, circumstances beyond your control, exempt you from contractual agreements? And here we have a tremendous debate. But the halach of Makas Medina does not kick in over here. If it did, we would have a clear-cut ruling of Yenakalo Mischaro, and the idea of, let's say, he paid up front, or he didn't pay up front, of Muchzok and Amotzi Mechavero, all that is irrelevant, because we have a separate takana called Makas Medina. And most of the cases that we have with Corona, of rentals, of hiring workers, and then the workers can't come, or you don't have work to offer them because the whole place is locked down. All these come under Makas Medina, because Makas Medina means the situation is objective and all parties are suffering from it, but not so in the case of Bidud. I found this fascinating because, again, if you'd have woken me up in the middle of the night a few days ago and say to me, well, what's the difference between the socher claiming I can't enjoy the benefit of the schirus because of a lockdown, or the socher claiming I can't enjoy the benefit of this schirus because I'm in lockdown, it makes no difference. In both cases, the circumstances are beyond his control. And yet there's a fundamental difference in halacha between the two. If everyone's in lockdown, that's called Makas Medina. And here the halacha is quite clear. But if one person is in lockdown, then we apply the principle of Mazlecha Gora. And this, my friends, should have been, in my opinion, the introduction to the introduction. In other words, now we go back to page one, and I begin to understand what the man is talking about on page one. And honestly, when I read it, I had no clue. Until I got to page two. And in page one, if you take a look at the text, if you happen to have it in front of it, he calls it Hakdama. He says, I want to give you an introduction to all these issues in Choshim Mishpat. And he says that lefi hashkafas haTorah lo mityachsim li'ones ke'al mikre bi'alma hashkafas haTorah. This is my friend, the head of a bezdin, and he's telling me about hashkafas haTorah. He's giving me a musashmuz about Jewish philosophy, and he says that if there are certain circumstances beyond your control, don't call that onus. That is not just happenstance coincidence. Ela onesh min hashamayim. Again, he's getting philosophical. I was so turned off when I read this. I have to tell you, this is so foreign. When the Gemara says mazlecha goram, and it appears all over the place in Bava Metzia and Ksuvos and elsewhere, the Gemara is not going into philosophical discussions about whether this was a punishment min hashamayim or not. I'm in a situation of onus. I have to ask myself, You know, okay, tshuva is always a good thing. You know, I'm not opposed to tshuva. But daf tshuva time. But don't give me a philosophical discussion where we're dealing with monetary law. Masa chagara means that if I, you know, let's say I'm switching the around the, I'm the maskir, and I offered you my rental, I designated for you, we signed a contract, you can't show up. If you can't show up and enjoy the benefit of this contract, that's your problem, it's not my problem. We're not getting into philosophical discussions here about onish min hashamayim. Totally foreign to my Weltanschauung, the way I was taught to understand halacha. He says, Lachain, kashakore ones hamafria. He says that whenever there is an ones that happens that makes it impossible for the contract to reach its fruition and for the benefit of the socher in this case, he cannot benefit it. Is bodkim, we have to check out me near Yosef Shaonish Baal. For who are Nikra Mazlagora? Who does it appear to be as if he's the victim of divine punishment? For who sofer gets a hefse? And he's going to suffer the loss. The af shemeduba ba'onis gomur, even though the circumstance is totally beyond his control, nevertheless, he is, so to speak, ashem. He is, so to speak, guilty because this is a divine punishment that's being meted out on him. And all of Lispogas Ahefsid, he has to suffer the loss. Achein lo kein ador b'makas medina. What is makas medina about which the Gemara says that if I rent your field and it's now attacked by the animals coming down from Shemaim, I have to suffer and pay half of the damages? Menakalo mischaro. That's in a case of an ones, and here's where we start page 2, L'chlal ha-noshin. Every single field in the entire district has been attacked by these chagavim, by these grasshoppers. The efshal yachso yosel liechem ratzdodin. There's no way they can say that one of the two parties is being punished. Everybody is suffering from this terrible situation. And therefore, oh, here's where he quotes the Ritva, L'chein anu roem es ha'ones kemazel shnehem. We view it as if they're both being punished. And L'chein adin sheshnehem yafsidu. Why is it that they split the loss? Because each one is being punished. And it's mazel shnehem goram. And therefore, yischalku behefseid mechtzal mechtzal. They will split the hefseid 50-50. And now I'll be right with you, Bobby, just want to finish up. And now, in the light of this philosophical hashkafa shia that he gave us as an introduction, we can now understand the difference that he's going to point out here on page 2 between Reuven, who is the socher, who's in bidud, as opposed to a general lockdown for the entire community. If there's a general lockdown, no one's benefiting from any rentals, and that's called a makas medina, he'll have to pay half. If, on the other hand, he's in lockdown because he had to be quarantined, oh, he's at fault. He's getting he's suffering an onus min shamayim. He has to suffer the loss. And according to one sheet, as we said, he has to pay every last penny of that rental. And halacha lemaisa, if the maskir is holding on to the socher's money, the socher has no recourse to get his money back. Yeah, Bobby. Whenever I do this, it means unmute yourself.
Yeah, it's not the mute. You can hear me now?
Yes, perfectly.
I unmuted myself. I don't know. It's a problem with my system. Anyway, what I was going to say is that one could really take it a step further in the sense of there could be a machlekes, which the Pesukim would have to figure out, is if I think I consider it to be a danger and, you know, somebody else doesn't consider it to be a danger. So in other words, like coming back to the first discussion about, you know, like different people look at the whole coronavirus differently. Like,
right.
So if you have the law of the land that says that everybody has to be locked down,
right,
it's clear. But let's say I say I'm not coming to the tzimmer I'm worried. Like the whole country is in trouble and locked, you know, in virus. It's a Macas Medina, in my opinion. But this, the mosque here says, just nothing, no problem. You know, you're just making a big deal out of nothing. You could come, right. There's no problem. So you can have a machlokes in whether it's a Macas Medina or
right.
not.
Right. He's assuming in this article, again, I'm only on page two of many, many pages, and each paragraph has long footnotes.
But Bobby, that's against the law. Even if the guy says there's no...
I'm not talking about law.
No, but Fakir, Bobby's talking about a situation where the law does not enjoin him from flying up to Tveria and enjoying this tzimmer. He decides for himself that he's going to be exposing himself to danger. Does that make it a self-imposed quarantine? Or does he have a right to say that...
Right, you can't say mazel chukum, or you can say it's not mazel chukum. Everybody is affected by this.
Right.
The other guy says, what do you mean? You know, yes, but it's not
right.
a big deal.
So, Bobby, again, you know, I could just tell you this. In this essay, he's assuming that Makas Medina is determined by the Medina. Meaning, if the Medina allows you, then the mosque has a right to say that the contract is legally binding.
But looking at the case of the Gemara with the Chagovim,
right.
it's a practical thing. You know, the Chagovim were everywhere. So, you know, I mean, you could have a situation where they argue, was it in Yenim's field also? Was it this field? Was it up? But in other words... You know, it's the same kind of a thing here. You could get into an argument about it.
Also, Rav, could you not say as well that the difference would be if the person is actually quarantined because he has corona and he's quarantined because he's exposed to someone who has corona. Exposed, because in that situation, that's not suffering. That's put upon you by the government. Couldn't you say that that's a little bit more like the first case?
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with you, Joe, that in those two scenarios, whether he has corona or he's been exposed to corona, there is a difference between the two. But the bottom line is that there's not a Makas Medina here. Why is there no Makas Medina? Because as far as the rental agreement is concerned, there are no bars here in terms of anyone else. Joe next door or Larry next door is actually going out to the tzimmer. And the law doesn't inhibit him from doing so. He is benefiting from his rental. He's not a bidud. That's not a Makas Medina. Once it becomes a bidud for everyone, what I call a general lockdown, that's called a Makas Medina. Now, Rabosa, I know that we're short on time. What I'd like to do in the next few minutes is just introduce two issues that I'd like to discuss with you, Blineda, next week. Is that okay? In the short amount of time. And then anyone who wants to stay a little bit later, and we can discuss what we had. Two issues. Issue number one is the issue called the Maram Padua, right? He lived about six centuries ago. And he wants to claim that the halacha makes a distinction between what's called bitul haschirus as opposed to I don't want to pay from now on. Bitul haschirus means that the claim of the socher is the deal is off. We never had a contractual agreement. Why? Because the pandemic is such that it makes this agreement non-fulfilling. You know, you cannot fulfill this agreement. You're supposed to be supplying me with a rental, and guess what? There's a general lockdown. You can't supply me with a rental. So what happens in this case? And the Maram Chalava, I'm sorry, Maram Mipadua claims that there are two ways of going. The socher has two alternatives in front of him. He could either say the deal was off, mikara means from the onset, from the get-go. Or he could say that I don't want to pay you henceforth, but the deal was on until this point. And the Maram Chalava is going to have... I'm sorry, I keep saying... And the Maram Mipadua is going to have an afgemina in a case where, let's say, I rent a storefront from you. And I bring in all my merchandise into the store. And then the pandemic breaks out. and I can't open the store. No one's opening stores. It's a general lockdown. Says the Maharam, in this case, Makas Medina will not allow, will not recognize the possibility of disqualifying, or shall I say invalidating, the original agreement. Why? Because since the original agreement was signed and sealed, the socher was benefiting from the schiras. He used it to set up shop, and all his merchandise was being held in that store. The best he could hope for is to be mavatel the contract from now and tomorrow, and he could say, I don't want to pay you henceforth. You know, there was a monthly rental fee. I don't want to pay you from this day and on. But he has no right to activate Makas Medina and say, well, the whole deal was off from the get-go because he enjoyed the benefit of it. Not only that, says the Maharam, he says that at this point, when the socher comes forward with his claim, he has to decide what he wants to do. Does he want to terminate the schiras? Or does he want to say, you know what, I'm holding out that, I want to keep my merchandise there. I have no other place to store my merchandise. And I'm holding out for a better day, when the sun will shine and we'll see the end of this pandemic, Ein Yiratzon. And therefore, I want to continue the agreement. And in this case, he's going to have to pay the full schiras. So that's one issue that I want to discuss with you. And another issue that I want to touch upon next week in Mirtz Hashem is the following question. This is the Marim Titkin, and he lived about five centuries ago. And the one who makes a big deal about that is not this article, but the article that I sent you last week from Havianu Chadarav. And he says that Makas Medina only applies when the Maka is beguf hadavar, it's actually in the object that's being rented. But if people are running away from the city because of a pandemic, that's not considered Makas Medina. And he proves it, because the Gemara's case of Makas Medina is Ochla Chagav, meaning I'm renting to you a field, and you are meant to produce with that field. The renter says, I can't produce because the Chagavim are eating up everything. That, he says, is Makas Medina. Why? Because it's Beguf HaDavar. It is something that impacts on the object itself, the rental itself. If, on the other hand, because of a lockdown, you don't have access to the rental, but the rental itself, the apartment, the tzimmer, whatever it might be, is in perfect shape, that's not called Makas Medina. That's the Maram Tikten. And again, if you happen to have last week's handout, so to speak, you'll take a look on page pay. So these are some of the issues that perhaps we could touch upon next week. But my son Binyamin says that he has access now to a new publication that addresses issues in Corona that have to do with vaccines and with medical personnel and with the whole question of exposing yourself to danger. I haven't gotten access to that yet. Binyamin, my son, is holding on to it, and I'll get it in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. So that I want to just throw that out at you as a possibility. If any of you don't mind, just typing out a very quick one-line email or WhatsApp message and tell me which way you want to go at this point. I can postpone our discussion of Choshen Mishpat in favor of all these issues that have to do with exposure and with Sakana. Or I can continue exactly where we left off here with the two issues in Choshen Mishpat there are many, many issues, but amongst them. So if you don't mind, just dropping me a quick note. Yeah, Bobby. Okay, thank you so much.
Say goodbye.
Oh, okay, good. Very good. Call to everyone. Should have a great week. Thank you so much.
By the way, Refers on.
Yes.
Since we have a second.
Let me just read to you the language here in the quote of the Maram Tikhtin, and he's quoted in the Shach in Siman Shin Lamed Dalet in Choshim Mishpat. He's also quoted by the Taz. Kol ones she'eino beguf habayis afilu b'makas medino chayav. If the ones that makes it impossible for him to enjoy the benefit of this rental contract is not in the bayis itself, it's external to the bayis, then even though it's a makas medina that impacts on the entire medina, nevertheless he's chayav, he has to pay. V'das hamach nefrayim to behikdim schoro afilu b'makas medina ein tzorch lahachzir. Okay, that's a different discussion here about the Mach Nefrayim. But getting back to the Maram Tikhtin, the halacha according to him would be that Sochar Bayis b'mokum shenizgar v'lo ha'yashayach li'ikonei se'elu b'glal ha'magefa is potem ilishalim olav. He doesn't have to pay. But then he says that im amaskir muchzak, if the maskir is holding on to the money of the socher, then it could be that he doesn't have to pay it all back, because we're going to fall back on the das hamaram tikhtin that this was not a makah in the house itself. People are now locked up in quarantine, in a lockdown. But it's not like the case of Makas Medina in the Gemara at the end of Bat Metzia, where the Chagavim, you know, attacked the field itself. And if you turn back for a moment to page Ayin Ches, Se'if Gimel, he writes, Yesh Omrim Shedin Zeh Nemar, this din of Makas Medina is Rak Kasher HaMaka Hi Beguf HaDov Rashayach LaMaskir Shehu Maskir. Aval maka chitzonit sherak monea me'asochel ishtamesh beguf adover kegon shesocher bayis ubnei ha'ir baruchu me'ha'ir machmas hacholi is then eino medake klum, and he's got to pay the full schirus. And that's the shita of the Maram Mitikhtin. So we have to keep that in mind as we go through these issues in Choshim Mishpat. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the Maram Padua. And that you'll see on page 2 in footnote number 9, which is actually quoted here above in the paragraph number 4. And he says the following. Sochar mokobu beglal makas hamedina ein shum efsharut lekayem es matoras haschirus. Nechluku haposkim adinu. How does this makas medina work? Is it a shemavatlim es haschirus meikara? We're going to completely null and void the entire schirus agreement as a result of this makas medina. Or shall we say that, okay, he sort of stops in the middle of the sentence here and he goes into a little bit of a digression here. He says, "Bazeh shavtu shavu aposkim sheim asocher eshkia harbe b'mokom." Right, he rented some sort of a storefront and he spent a lot of money to prepare it. And therefore, through bitul haschirus, he's going to lose all that money that he put into the schirus, or he gives the flip case, Misha Sochar Shetach, Kidei Lahokim Bo Misada, Lefi Horos Rishus, also Lahatzik Misada Ptucha, he's not allowed to keep this restaurant open, so he rented a restaurant. And Balachanut, the owner, Hishkia Kesef, Behatamata Shetach Le Misada. So the owner of this Shetach actually spent a lot of money in organizing it in such a way that it could serve as a restaurant. He says, In such a case, lechol adeos lo donim bozeh sheyesh levatel heskem aschirus. Everybody agrees that there's no way of canceling the original schirus. That's not going to go. That's not going to fly. And therefore, on page 3, he says in number 7, Adam shesochar mokom kigon lemesiva simcha o lemechira shchunatit v'ekev horos harashus einef sharut lekayemet haschirut v'asochar adayin lo shilem lemaskir l'das hamaram mipadua yochol levatil es haschirus meikora upotu mitashlum kolshu. So on the one hand, the Maram Mipadu is really the makil, so to speak, and the defender of the socher. He doesn't have to pay anything. If the socher opts for the possibility of, just, I want out of this contract, he doesn't have to pay him a dime. But the Ramah, apparently, says that the socher, in a case where he's not mevatel l'schirus, for example, if he invested in the place that he rented, is then, in such a case, then he has to chip in for the loss, and he's chayev l'shalim chetzi. That's according to one school of thought. Okay, Mr. Shev, we'll pick this up next time. Thank you so much.